Welcome to the Author It Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Dan.
And this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. Tonight, it's going to be a little different because we are live reacting to the Land Cruiser launch, which is happening right now. And they're watching it and I'm not. And so they're having way more fun than I am.
Yeah. Land Cruiser. New Land Cruiser. Debuting as we speak. And I mean, it's so it's a GX550 underneath. Yep. And on top,
it is a Toyota GX.
It looks good. It looks good. It looks like a 60 or 62, depending on which headlights you get.
Looks like that gray Poupon color is neat. I like that.
The gray Poupons.
Yeah, it's good.
I like it.
Chris will soon bring up pictures so that we don't.
I have the leaked images today.
But
the best part that I can see is they brought back two-tone roofs, which that's definitely a throwback.
White roof, always good.
Cygnus white, if I remember correctly, on those like FJ40s.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what I'm thinking about doing the roof on my GX.
Let's do it.
There's been a couple of people who've done that, but not white. I've seen one white.
Maybe it should.
There are a couple that are black. Not bad.
What is it with like?
Yeah, my truck's black, so I want to do white roof to make it less hot.
Less hot. So real fast, GX launch. We basically got the dark gray one and a tan version. Here we are, Land Cruiser launch. We have a dark gray and a tan with a white roof. Did they just swap front ends? Like, is there only two trucks?
No, I think the 550, wasn't it green? Didn't they do a Nori green over trail?
Well, they have that one. The prototype that they're moving around a lot is the tan.
The tan one, yeah. That's the one I've seen everyone have hold of.
That's the one they're going to shows with, but the videos, and they're showing the tan one in the video too, but they also have the Nori example of over trail as well, because they have the over trail and the over trail plus, so... The prototypes, I don't know what's in the prototypes because some of them don't have everything on them yet. I don't know.
Have you been hands-on with the 550?
Sorry?
Chris, go ahead.
Nope, you already got it.
Oh, Dan, have you been... So background for the listeners who aren't watching and looking at Dan's face with the GXLR hat. But Dan, why don't you give everybody your... quick little elevator pitch about who you are and how GXOR came to be.
Sure. Dan Coons, out of Atlanta, but I founded GXOR, and that was in July of 2016 on Facebook was the first. It came about because I actually bought a GX in 2011. And it came about because I was traveling for work and otherwise, and I saw Prados elsewhere, and I was like, I always liked Prado 120s, like everybody that ever went out of the country and saw a Prado 120 and went, ooh.
And you bought a 470 initially?
Yeah, so in 11, that was right after the 460s came out, so the 470s were really affordable and low mileage because everyone traded up, right? So I went and I found one, and I was like, well, it's like the same, it's the same picture. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try and get some parts for it. So I looked into it and called some folks, and I ordered a pallet of equipment from Australia. And this all has to do with how GXOR started. And I started seeing, like, ordered a pallet of stuff and was like, okay, I'm going to try it. And I bolted on an Ironman lift, a bumper. That bumper's still on it, but I did that bumper and that snorkel, some Asphere skid plates from Israel, and some other stuff for Prado stuff, and it worked. And I was on 33s at the time, and I went off road and immediately like broke it, and I just like folded in tie rods. I had a Land Cruiser before, I had solid axle, you know, I had a 100 too, and it was like, oops. So I learned, I learned more, and I started trying to find people like, okay, can I be bigger stuff? You know, improve, upgrade, whatever. And found out there were like four other guys. And they were distributed everywhere. But they had started doing the same thing. So I was like, oh. So kind of turned into a grounds, like that turned into a little group. And then we started forming another group, and it kind of grew a little bit. And then one of the guys who formed the group kind of dropped out and just bailed. And so there was nothing left. And that was like, okay. So I was like, well, come up with a name, come up with a logo. GXOR was started, and it was like 15 people in 2016. And then it went to 500 out of nowhere. And then it went to 5,000, and then it went to 10,000. Now we're at 35,000. Reddit's at 14,000. I don't even know. I didn't ask Woody, but you know, I Hate Mud has a lot of volume.
It's gotten big.
Yeah.
But
So now
I think the first that everybody really got GXOR in their face was when Lexus actually did their own GXOR concept.
Yeah. Which
I don't know if you had anything to do with that, but that was the game changer, you know, because people were starting to catch on to the fact that it's kind of a better forerunner. And then that came out, and it was like, oh, wait, why are we building these?
Well, I'll set that record straight. I was not involved with the 2019 GXOR concept. I'm 100% in support of the 2019 GXOR concept. I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
Yep.
I had just done a GX, a Lexus driver story, I think it was called, where they sent a Lexus crew, marketing crew out and filmed me and asked me questions about my journey to GXOR and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I went to FJ Summit. And I was, I think, in February they did the video. And then I went to FJ Summit in whatever that was, July that year. And there that was, that thing. Mm-hmm. It was like, it just appeared. And I was like, what is that? You know, that's amazing. And then I walked over to it and it had like GXOR in the wrap and like they'd made a little GXOR logo of their own accord with like F Sport Blue. And it was like, cool. Yeah. It was so cool. And I was just like, wow. Yeah.
They get it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was like, they get it for sure. And totally cool with it. It was like CBI did a bunch of that work. And Kurt, I think, orchestrated a lot of that work too.
And as he does.
It was just awesome. I think it was really cool. I thought I was very surprised that they did it, given just like the nature of corporate Toyota, Lexus. It was like the first time they listened to the users, or the consumers, and it was like really refreshing and nice, and it felt good. So
right. Well, it seems like we know that Toyota made a big push to like revitalize their sports car side of things, but it seems like since 20, I don't know, call it 16 or 17, the company as a whole has been like TRD Pro, you know, rear wheel drive sports cars. I mean, even going back to the, you know, Scion FRS, which was originally it is still the Subaru, but you know, it was a Scion and now it's Toyota,
right.
And they're really like leaning into it and changing the perception, and that flows over, like you said, into Lexus. Like, people don't think about Lexus as, you know, like a fun, exciting company, but again, like RCF, LC500, LFA, you know, now there's the GXOR stuff, and we're getting lockers on the 550, you know.
The 550, like the transition, because there was like this period, right? Like 2019, they did the concept, and the 460s were, they came out with the off-road package, which was like a driver assist computer that allowed you to get like a 360 and the ground monitor and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, and that was cool. Like, it was very cool. Cause it also came with MTS, crawl control, all those different things. But then like they went into this like period where it's like sports cars, like you were saying, like the LC500, the RCFs. They put out the GSF for a couple years before that, now the IS500 and all these cars, and then this thing, the GX550, like, whoa,
like new world. It's a new world.
Yeah, they took out the third row just so you had more room for gear to go off road.
It's great, love it.
Yeah, you got one. I did leave kids behind with no third row. That's just me, though. I'm a niche market with six totals.
So. I mean, I'm eventually going to get one, but I think I'll probably work with, you know, the see if I get a chance to drive one without having to buy one first, and then
highly recommend.
So yeah. we have some things we're working on here.
Cool. Cool. So how'd you get started in off-roading?
Well, the first car I ever wanted was a Jeep that I couldn't have. And so I ended up this is like a common story to everybody, right? Well, my first car, yeah, I wanted a Jeep. What'd you get? I got a Cavalier.
Yes.
A four-door K-car Cavalier that blew smoke if you went over 55. So I always wanted an off-road truck, and after I graduated from college, got a job, and was able to actually do something about it, I got a Land Cruiser. So my first off-road vehicle was a 1982, maybe it was 82, FJ60.
Okay.
But from there, I joined TLCA, got involved with local chapter. Progressed from a 60 that was stock to, I bought an FJ55 and I lifted it. Mm-hmm. And then I progressed to 80s, and then I moved into a 100, and then I ended up finding the GX, and I wheeled the whole time. I was over playing around back in the day. And if anybody was in the Tennessee area and off-roaded a lot or heard of it, Teleco.
Oh, I remember Teleco.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time at Teleco on various vehicles. Mm-hmm. And broke many things, but it was a great time. And once I started, it was like the Land Cruiser thing segued over with logically, just like, yeah, it just segued back to Land Cruiser, I guess. But yeah, that's how I got started.
You skipped the 200.
I skipped the 200. I did. I got into the GX before. Honestly, I like a GX 470 off-road better than a 200. 200s are real big.
They're wide.
Yeah.
How was the 55?
It's horrible. It's wonderful. It was like every time you went off-road, you had the most fun ever breaking your arms because it was like manual steering. So mine was, it was 133s.
What?
Yeah, it was on 33s lifted with sliders and stuff, but it had manual steering. So you'd sit there and you're strong arming over top of stuff, and it was open, and it was manual four speed. So I was just like trying to steer with one hand and shift. And it was like every time you're like, whoa, I got thrown across the bench seat in the front when you hit a rock. It was great.
That's like your year's workout every time you go in the woods.
You know how much I learned about off-roading, though? I highly suggest like open manual, like horrible experience. Like my hands were sore. Like you come back and you're like, your arms are physically sore and you have bruises from being chucked around in the cabin.
Oh man, that's great. Like
wrestling an angry dog.
Yeah. Oh,
that's so fantastic.
An angry pig.
Angry pig, yeah.
Oh man. So you've you mentioned FJ Summit, so we know you've done the trails out in Colorado. Where else have you gone in your off-road travels other than there in Teleco? And also tell us about the Rubicon.
Yeah, did that. I've been a lot of places. I've been through like Tempe and in Texas, did like Hot Springs in Arkansas. All the parks in the southeast, so Yawari and Wind Rock, and there's a place called The Cove, which is a little bit off the beaten path, and I won't talk too much about where it is because it's amazing.
Does that have a waterfall you can park under?
Maybe.
I think I'm very familiar with this.
You guys can continue that conversation later.
I've done a lot. Southeast through the midsection of our lovely country out west, Colorado, obviously Utah, Moab.
Yeah.
And then the Rubicon is the furthest west that I've been to wheel, but that trip was a long trip. So I called it my 10-20-30, and I promised I'm going to write like an article or a book about it. So basically I did the 10th FJ Summit. And then I went to, I think it was FJ Summit. Then I went to like the 20th Cruise Moab. And then the 30th, Rubicon.
Oh my gosh.
That was all one trip?
In the same year. Yeah.
In the same year? Oh, man. Yeah.
So that's, it was wild. So I did, yeah. So I went to these events.
Just in road tripping?
Or was it G-Spinner? I can't remember. It may have been, I can't remember, because Cruise Moab was definitely 20 years now, right? And then I know Rubicon was 30. Maybe it was G-Spinner. But anyway, I had three events in 1 year across the country, and I had to move myself from here in Georgia to the middle to go to Cruise Moab. Then I had to get out to the Rubicon. And I broke, this is earlier in my build story, so I didn't have the bigger stuff yet. So I broke in Moab, and then I left my truck there, and I ordered a bunch of parts to fix it at a shop. And then I went to FJ Summit when I got fixed by flying back and picking it up. And then when I picked it up, I restaged and planned for Rubicon. And then that's about, let me see, that's about the size of my truck when I did the Rubicon right there. That's, that's actually at, that's right off of Yankee Boy near the entrance to Governor Basin in Ouray.
Okay.
So, and, so you did the Rubicon on what? 35s and locked front and rear?
35s, locked front and rear. I did have the diamond axle at that time. So I had a 9.5 Land Cruiser diff in the back. So
okay,
a little bit stronger. Stock steering rack. Cracked the steering rack in half.
Oops.
But not until I was able to drive it. It wasn't leaking. I don't know how that works, but it was like cracked. It wasn't cracked this way in half. It was cracked,
this way. Through? Oh, yeah. Really?
It was like cracked vertically across it. So the actual aluminum housing was broken, but it was still held together.
That so is it remarkable. Didn't
leak and I got home. But yeah, I was on a tree. That's a tree on the left.
there's rocks everywhere. Yeah, I'm stuck on the tree.
That's a little
camera. Yeah, I was aiming for the tree. I just missed. But yeah, that was a heck of a trip. That was hard. I highly encourage everyone to go to the Rubicon.
That's God. That's a lot. That's a lot. But
make sure you go with someone. Don't go.
Yes.
Yeah, don't. We do not solo Rubicon alone. Let the record show.
It was easier than I thought, and it was so much harder than I thought as well. Because like Little Sluice, the decision tree, Big Sluice, all those things, you hear these words and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And you get there and there is like a boulder the size of your car on either side of a tree. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, now I know why they call that decision tree.
Well, what everybody, what I've been hearing recently from people who have done the Rubicon on like,
it's a tree.
34s, 35s. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's not what that tire was supposed to go.
That's not decision tree. That's bad choice tree.
That's bad choice tree. That looks like tire slipped off tree.
Yeah. It's bad line tree.
Bad line tree. How many trees could you say that about around the country? but yeah, no, people always say that like the Rubicon, the difficulty of some of the obstacles isn't necessarily as hard as they expected, but it just never stops. Like you don't have downtime.
It's exhausting. You wheel, like I actually went in from down Cadillac Hill. So I went in instead of going through Loon. Mm-hmm. So I ended up in Rubicon Springs and it was like very different because you have a different, no matter how you run the Rubicon matters. Because if you run it like the traditional way, it's one experience. If you run it the other way, it's different and arguably harder. But it also depends year to year what happens. Because if it was underneath 20 feet of snow, like there's still snow there now.
Right? Yeah.
So when that snowpack melts and it moves everything, then you got to see what happened because there's boulders that move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, keeps it interesting. Like a line is never the same year after year.
I can't wait to go back with our trucks the way they are now.
So yeah. So what's the story with your current GX garage? So we just talked about the 470.
Yeah. I have currently between my wife and I have my 470 that's RCLT front 200 series steering rack, diamond rear, locked, all the jazz, like everything you could possibly do to it. She has the mechanical twin. So she has RCLT 37s, rear diamond, lockers, all the jazz, but she has her own touches. So she made different choices on bumpers and colors, and she wants pink. So she's got a pink GX 470.
Hell yeah.
Pink accents with gray and white. It looks awesome. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it is one of a kind.
Well, oh, you have one? Yeah, there you go. So, you know, so we have the same capability, so we can go everywhere together, which is cool. And then beyond awesome. Her truck, she also owns that orange. You can see the hint of it in the back. There's a BJ60 back there.
Oh, man.
That's her truck that she imported from Canada. So that's a Canadian spec, the G badged BJ60.
Oh, wow.
And then we have a 22 Nori Green Black Line GX 460. And then we have her 97 rest of the world hacked Porsche Boxster that she buzzes around in.
So nice.
we got rid of all the O2 and all that junk because we live in Georgia. It's a 97, so it's legal.
Yep.
And then I have two more GXs, but my sons drive those.
You covered a lot of the bases there.
Yeah. So I also have a South African bush trailer that we use, which is pretty cool. Conqueror 440. You ever hear of a Conqueror 440?
Have not, but Chris.
Yeah, that's cool.
I have. I live in nerdy off-road trailer land because I want one, but I don't have one yet.
Can you pull?
So we have one of those, and I tow it. Honestly, I tow that thing with my 470 on 37s. So it can actually, it has trailing arms that are independent with Fox shocks, and it can go everywhere we go. But it has like heat, air, full kitchen and fridge.
Oh my God.
Two queen beds that pop out. It's like super, super. It's like you're overland geek mode. That's like,
that is
candy. Stop it.
It's overland candy.
Overland candy.
Watch this.
What's the name of a documentary?
Did I get it right?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So that thing unfolds with 360 awnings, and you get like 400, it's like 250, 300 square foot of under awning. And then you have the whole inside that folds out, two queen beds. The whole front end is full of like propane water pumps and generator, like whatever.
What is it called?
Conqueror UEV 440 Extreme.
Extreme.
300 square feet.
It's got an elephant on it, so clearly
New York City
is ready for whatever.
Apartment. That's
right. Awesome.
Okay. Yeah, that's really cool.
So that's the herd of, I use herd for elephants, but that's what we got. That's the fleet.
Does the trailer have matching wheels and tires to the 470?
It won't fit. It has 33s. That's the biggest you can put on there. And I put, I did put Land Cruiser. They are six lug and they are Toyota wheels. So they're Land Cruiser wheels. I think they're actually FJ wheels, Steelies.
Nice.
So,
and
like I could technically put those on the truck.
Right.
I'd just be a little bit.
Can't put the truck wheels on.
Yeah, there you go. There it's deployed.
On. Holy shit.
Deployed.
Tactical, so, man.
We're going to talk a lot more in the future, Dan, because I have a crap ton of kids that are getting older and GXs are super cheap used. So
that's actually why it grew. I think the price of entry, like people don't think of a Lexus as something you can afford to go off roading in. Like that's kind of an anti-pattern to me in general. Right. But it's true.
Yeah.
Well, and we years ago, my wife will still yell at me because the truck that she loved the most was her V8 4.7 liter powered 4Runner that she had. So get back into something like that would be ideal.
It's the same truck. So the limited V8 4Runner all-wheel drive is exactly the same drivetrain except for one thing. It has a two-prong actuator on the transfer case because it's electric. Versus the GX, which has a manual. So the Lexus is better than the Toyota because it's less electric.
Right. The manual
thing. Does that even make sense?
No, not at all. Not in that era of Lexus and Toyota. Like, no, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Or you just do an FJ transfer case swap and eliminate all the variables.
You can bolt it. Yeah, you can bolt up a transfer case. You can swap out the whole. I mean, it's crazy what you can do, and they're interchangeable. Like, you can run fifth gen CVs,
which is
in an 03 GX.
Those things are like, you can get 400 parts everywhere, anywhere, yeah. And like not that expensive too.
Yeah, but a base, you know, if you go in and get a TRD Pro 4Runner, it's more expensive than a GX.
Dude, so I bought my GX. I bought my GX in, Chris, when was it? The fall of 21, maybe?
I mean this politely, but it is hard to remember dates and vehicles with you.
I can't even, So that's fair. That's fair.
Which, to be honest, the GX has been around the longest, right? Like,
I haven't, I've only owned one vehicle longer than the GX in the last 7 or 8 years.
Which was the Avalanche?
I haven't owned the Avalanche technically since 2013.
But you knew somebody who owned it the whole time.
Yes.
So when did you join GXOR?
What's that?
When did you join GXOR if you've owned your GX so long?
I want to say
probably before I bought it.
It was 2021.
Okay. So when I bought it in 2021. And I ended up buying the GX because a CPO truck was significantly less expensive than a CPO. Yeah. I was trying to get into another fifth gen 4Runner, and it was like $5,500 to $7,500 more for comparable miles and age, you know?
So, but here's what's crazy is like GXs. So I'll tell you what, I'll disclose what I paid for my GX as a special treat because I don't typically talk about it, but I bought it in 2011, right? And it was the truck of an ATF agent who bought it in Guam.
Huh.
There's a Lexus dealership in Guam, by the way.
That's
Guam
awesome.
Guam is actually a very active, large chapter of GXOR because there's a dealership in Guam.
That's so but interesting.
This dude imported it to Vancouver and then lived there, and his wife drove it. And then they brought it to Atlanta when he transferred again, and I bought it from him. And it was like, again, it was like 2011. So this truck's like seven, almost 8 years old,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Okay.
I hadn't caught on
yet. It had 96,000 miles on it in 2011. Think about what that would go for today. I paid 16.
It's like 45. Like it's, look at.
I paid 16 for a seven-year-old truck with less than 100,000 miles on it back then. And that was like, because they were much more expensive then. They've gotten less expensive now.
Right.
So that's of course age.
Goodbye.
And blah, blah, blah. But
and now it has.
I was like happy.
You're into a 3X with parts and upgrades.
I don't want to talk about
that. Yeah, I keep a spreadsheet. Yeah. I keep a spreadsheet of all the shit, and I have the cell that totals it hidden, so I can't.
No, I delete. It. I deleted that.
I had See, that I. Way. I have the maintenance spreadsheet, but I don't put price on anything. I know what I've done. I'm not recording how much I've spent.
My maintenance spreadsheet's right here. Yeah. I don't want to write anything down anymore.
Ugh.
Oh. I just know who I buy stuff from. I'm like, oh, I need another one of those.
Ugh. Right.
No. So we're the only, as far as I know, we're the only people that have two RCLTs in the same family.
Okay.
So
maybe inside Marlin, somebody too in the same family? Nobody really.
No, Big Mike, I talked to him. I don't think the first 460 is on the rack out there right now.
Hmm.
So, but no other, I don't know of anybody else that's done two in the same family.
Interesting.
So,
yeah, I mean, they
that
just
was
started
kinda wild.
Pumping those out for the fifth gen for the 4Runner. So now that they're coming out for the 460, man, it is going to be game changer.
Like, well, it's the same kit. They just never tried it. So the 200 series rack, they were worried about clearance on the pan, but the pan on the 460 is relatively close for oddly close to the V6 in the 4Runner.
Mm-hmm.
So their clearance doesn't seem to be an issue. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Jeff's the guy doing it. He's one of the mods in GXOR. So we'll find out shortly.
Oh, man. How much width does the RCLT add?
WMS to WMS, I know this extremely well. It might be a good segue. No, that's not a good segue. But the width is 2.75 inches for the long travel portion. So your actual wheel mounting to wheel mounting surface is 2.75 on each side. So you get about 5.5.
So probably still narrower than a 200, or just right about at it.
It's like I'm on 1250s, 37 1250s, and I think mine's like 82.
Okay. That's like right
there. That's barely, like, my stock Sequoia is 80.
Yep.
So, like, that's super reasonable.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not extra wide. I don't need, like, Raptor lights or any kind of craziness. So, it's a moderate, I think it's a rock crawling long travel. So, it's not like a 3.5-inch pre-runner desert thing. But it does, like, the design was intended to move, like, keep all your stock pivots and joints and stuff in the same orientation. So you can still align it. You can still, you know, run it like a normal truck and it's daily driver, you know, on the road, it's like smooth as caddy. But when you get in the rocks, it has really cool geometry so that your CVs will tuck into the arms a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you get a little more flex.
Right.
It's strong. It's just strong, but it's not overly large. It's not, it's amazing, first of all, but you get the upgrade of the steering alone is worth it.
Right. But it doesn't look silly like T-Bay on top, like, you know?
Doesn't look like Superman.
Yeah, right. Do you know how much up and down travel you have with it?
I did. I don't right now.
It's written out somewhere on the forums.
It's in that spreadsheet. I deleted, but no, it's there is a couple of pictures. I actually posted a couple of pictures of it of flexing. So the rear has long travel with the diamond and stuff. So I mean, and I have hydro bumps on all four corners. Mm-hmm. So it does. I don't have sway bars, and I tow with no sway bars because the hydro bumps are set to engage and balance the truck before it gets too leany. So it'll lean, but it won't lean past a point because the hydros catch it.
Oh, you have HKDSS.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So, kind of. And then the actual travel of the suspension itself, I mean, it moves. Like, it'll crawl. It's impressive. There are some pictures out there of it flexed out. It's worth, it's very expensive, but it's very worth it. Like, here you can see, like, it's obviously, it's all stock bolts to the stock spots on the frame. The upper control arms go in the stock spots in the frame. Bolt goes through normal.
That's awesome.
The spindle upper control arms. It's a typical Toyota thing, but it's just a little bit more, a little beefier.
Yeah, it just got science behind it so that you're not.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of science.
Crazy CV angles.
And the RCVs that don't break.
That is.
And then I have lots of stuff. Extras. I don't know. I don't really have a need for a secondary that big with an internal bump and another reservoir, but it looks cool. If I go really, really fast, it helps.
Yeah.
I don't really ever go that fast.
These trucks aren't that fast when they're on stock highway tires.
Well, it's actually, that's really not slow. That truck is fast.
Really?
Yeah. I have the headers and the open exhaust. It's like 2.5 to 3 inch exhaust with, I mean, it's quick. It'll go.
The Doug Thorley headers?
Yeah. Yeah.
The ones that are out of stock for me always.
You know what sounds ridiculous? The suspension is the most useful on the frickin' highway.
Really?
When you drive, when was the last time you drove across Route 40? I-40 going 40? West.
Oh,
I-40 going west.
I've never
been. I live by 70, going through
Mississippi.
Yeah.
Yeah. I-20 going through Mississippi. I-40 going anywhere on I-40. And I-70 is okay. But if you go down to I-10 as well, it's like you're basically on a blue trail on the interstate. Because the semis and the trade have torn it up and the weather, the hurricanes and stuff. Like, anybody listening to this, if they know what I'm, they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, those are. But yeah.
That's funny. That's so interesting.
Which that's, it's funny you say it like that, because we drove I-90 when I was like 15, and all I remember for all of South Dakota was the seams in the road, the dunk, the dunk, the dunk, like just hours and hours of that crap. Yeah. We did it 2 years ago, glass smooth now. So like, yeah. I don't know.
You can literally catch air on I-20.
What?
Yeah, there are bridges.
Horrible.
No, there are bridges where you can literally, you can launch off the bridge and like in my truck, like my truck has a lot of movement, right? It can absorb a lot. It was actually like whoo.
Not good. Not good. Speaking of going what else fast, which is your wife doing the Rebel Rally in her truck?
Yes, she is. That's primarily what I've been doing, aside from, you know, doing the day-to-day work stuff, is prepping the truck and supporting her in terms of like fundraising. GXWire.org still has, we stopped all our sponsorship stuff, but we still have a little link there if you want to donate. But we've prepped the truck, got it through. We have to add the security, not security, but the safety stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to put fire extinguishers, recovery gear, mounts for shovels, max tracks, etc. Mm-hmm. And then she had to get a compliant rally trip computer.
Yep.
So she's team 143 with her partner Nancy, and they have been training, like they've been doing all the hard work. I'm doing, like, I get to play with trucks and upgrade stuff, and like I've never played around with a Terra trip before, but it's a old school rally computer.
Mm-hmm.
Has like calibrated speed off of either a magnetic pickup that you install down at your wheel and it like detects your stud going by and you calibrate it, or there you go, and then it like takes it and says, okay, here's your split time, here's your distance, and it can do that off of a non-GPS base, because this is them in Wyoming. They were just out, they flew out to Denver and drove up to Wyoming and like buried trucks in sand to get recovery out of the way, and dead reckoning in the dunes, because it's hard to do that, because you can't see anything, so you have to kind of get your bearing and figure out what's going on. This was their instructor, who many people know as Daniel Markowski, but he helped them learn a little bit about recovery techniques and safety and stuff. And then that's Nancy's GX back there. That's my wife on the right. That's Nancy. They're doing I don't even know what that is. It looks like a geomarker.
Yeah, it looks
the U.S. Geologic Survey mark or something. But they were doing but you have to do, so the Rebel Rally is like hard. So you don't have GPS.
Yep.
You don't have electronics. You're not allowed to have anything that can show you where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So they tape off your mirror. Like you can't have north, south, east, west on your mirror, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a nav, they do like anti-tamper tape on it.
Yeah.
Like they shut you down so you can't use anything. And you basically get like a paper map booklet for the day that shows like you're going to use this map for coordinates and waypoints. And then this map, they'll just dump on you some point a book. Then you have to all of a sudden switch to enduro mode and do like full on rally calls.
Right.
But you have no electronics to know where the heck you are. So if you're doing rally calls, you're doing it off of, you know, basically a calibrated rally computer to say, go this many kilometers this direction and then turn right, and then figure out if you get to where they want you to by the end of the book. And if you don't, you lose points. And if you go and stop at waypoints along the way, like not the enduro part, but the normal part, you plot out your route for the day and you have to go over there and be like, I see the green flag. So yay, I got the easy one.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a harder one. Let's go for more points. It's blue. The flag's like 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
So you may not be able to see it, so you have to get closer, and then you go get that one. And then there are black waypoints that have no marker, and you don't find out if you got close until you.
Yep.
And the beacon, the little beacon thing, is what they track, and then they have a beacon on your car so that they know where you are, but you do not. And you can also go and find out where you are, but it's points.
Right. We've had probably.
Chris, had three or four different teams of women on. Yeah.
Close to 10 different Rebel Rally participants on our show. And
it's crazy.
Every time that we have them on and they talk about it, it just sounds like it's like harder and harder.
It gets harder every time they explain it. Yeah.
It doesn't sound like anything is making it easier. It's just like, there's so many variables and it sounds so
it's hard.
Immersive and like a complete reframing of your brain from, you know,
I'm impressed.
I can't imagine.
I'm impressed. And the fact that it's so long, it's so long. It's the longest navigation race in North America.
Yeah.
It's longer than the Baja 1000.
That's crazy.
That's so they're out there for like, what? Think about that. Like everything I just said for 250 kilometers or 300 kilometers a day.
Not that Baja is easy, but it makes Baja sound easy because you have everything available to you. It's just
go fast that way. That's Baja.
Set your own pace. Don't crash.
Yeah.
You know,
right?
Like, this is don't crash and set your own pace and figure out every single step.
And it's not that easy either because you can't crashing is not really you have to go according to what you said.
Right.
So it's not just like go fast and take chances, right? It's like I will proceed from this waypoint to that waypoint at this rate, therefore I will arrive at this time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get penalized if you speed.
It's the ultimate time speed distance.
Yeah. It's I'm impressed that one, like it's become what it is. It's awesome.
It is.
Two, that, you know, the opportunity, the thing that I think is most impressive is that they have this motto and my wife reminded me the other day, they say you can race with the car in your driveway. And it's like the daily driver that you go on a trail with, like she has, and obviously it is a daily driver. She can drive it every day, go on the highway, it's licensed and whatever, all the regulations, but like to do that and go out there and have the experience of essentially having like it's the car level experience because it's like the big equipment and crew and experience and moving city sort of vibe.
And there's a
awesome. There's
a stock class too, like for vehicles that are unmodified and manufacturers participate too. So it's not like this is inaccessible, you know, it's a good showing and you got to keep us up
to date
on how she does.
They allowed 37 1250s this year.
Oh, really? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, have mercy if they need to, you know, swap one. That's,
oh God,
that's a lot of time.
Oh yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I figured out her like wheel and tire weighs as much as she does.
That sounds about right. I am obsessing over tire weights these days just because like every pound counts for gas mileage, you know, and unsprung weight is enormous. But like, even I have 285 70s and like, I'm at like 90 pounds for a wheel and tire, you know, and that's not even, that's nothing.
Mine are, like the bead locks that we run are like, I think they're like 36 pounds.
Yeah.
But the tires we run are stupid. Yeah, they're heavy.
Yeah.
Like over 100 pounds.
I know. Last week?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Chris, was that last week we were talking to Tate about the tractor tires or whatever?
Yeah, 44s like on an
275 pounds each or something.
FJ62? Yeah.
Yeah.
44s are big.
Yeah.
Right?
That's big.
Yeah, that's...
That's like Arctic truck.
Right? Oh man, that would be a great Rebel rally rig because you just go like full float over the sand.
They don't want you to float.
Too big a tire.
That's understandable. So it would be a great dune cruiser.
Well, the other thing is like you were talking about yours and your mileage. It's like the other thing that a lot of people don't realize about GXs is that if you spend the time, and obviously there's investment, but if you regear them and you catch up on maintenance and you stick with it and you really, really grind into it, I don't get bad gas mileage for what I've got.
Yep.
Like I tow at 10 and I can cruise on the highway about 14-15 without a trailer.
That's very good.
So couple that with the fact that I've got the prototype tank that they created the LRA for GX with.
Mm-hmm.
I have 55 gallons of gas.
Dude, your bladder is your limiting factor. Like,
oh boy.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a biological timer.
Who'd you work with? Chris? out at Long Range?
Well, this was so yeah. Cruiser Brothers brought him in when Ward was back involved with LRA, and then we were shipping. So they I was in California and I dropped my truck because I wanted the Nomad valve body. We can do some more truck stuff, techie. So the Nomad, I will tell you this, I'm not in any way, shape, or form supported or sponsored by this company. Western Australian Transmission. They have this thing that is amazing. They have them for 80s, they have them for 100s, they have them for GXs. It's called a Nomad HD valve body. And it basically takes the American transmission and changes the pressures inside the transmission so that it shifts like a truck.
Huh.
So you get a longer first gear, a longer second gear. You can actually accelerate and use all the way up to about 3,500 RPM before it shifts. So you get more power for the time that you spend in a particular gear, which translates to more power equals more efficiency in the end.
Right.
Because you're not dropping and bogging up to the RPM band again when you're shifting early, our soft transmissions do. It also affords you the addition of a torque converter lockup button.
Ooh.
So when you're on the highway, like when I tow or I'm on the highway for a long period, you hit the torque converter lockup and then you immediately stop spinning your ATF.
Yep. You see
a temperature. And you have a physical connection and your ATF temps drop. Towing is amazing because you don't have to worry about it.
Mm.
And you basically, it's like a really good way to handle the power of it, but also distribute the power properly and manage it better.
Mm.
So that's a really cool little object there. But that led to a whole conversation of, I'm going to install that. Cruiser Brothers installs those. Okay, I'll bring my truck out. Well, we also are working with LRA. I was like, okay, let's,
Yeah.
Oh, but that doesn't fit because your charcoal canister is in the way in the US. Okay, well, we'll cut it, send it back to Australia. They'll refab it to fit and then ship it back and then we'll install it in your truck.
Oh my God.
Then you can come back out, pick it up, and then go run the Rubicon.
Untested.
So that's exactly what I did. So I went with a new valve body, new fuel tank. They actually welded some armor on it just because they thought I was going to drag it. I only hit it once. But it was awesome because I drove from Cruiser Brothers. It was a couple hours from the Lake Tahoe. I drove from there to Lake Tahoe, camped. Did the Rubicon, did all the Rubathon events.
Good Lord.
And then drove out and then drove to Reno, Nevada on one tank of gas.
Jesus. Oh my God. That's
crazy.
I mean, 55 gallons of gas at 8 gallons, that's an enormous difference in vehicle weight between full and empty.
Yeah. Progressive springs are required.
Yes. That's funny. Never think about
that. I have the first set of Dobinson 849 springs, which is a progressive spring that's long travel, but it can support 1,000 to 1,200 pounds over stock static.
Oh my God.
And still be progressive beyond that. So for every inch down, it takes progressively more weight to get it. So I actually can tow. The trailer has almost a 700 pound tow tongue weight.
Mm-hmm.
I can fill my tank. I have a full drawer full of tools, a fridge full of stuff, and put the trailer on it, and it'll sit basically a little bit below.
Oh man,
its static height.
That's crazy. That's I mean, in the UTV world, everybody runs progressive or dual rate, and people out east
get
too much into progressive.
Science rules.
Science, man. Fucking crazy.
And science, it's your friend.
So what haven't you upgraded on your truck?
The engine.
Okay. Yeah. Keep that the way it is.
I've pretty much touched everything. I've hacked into my VSC computer so I can turn it off at will, but nothing else. So I can hit a switch and it'll just light up VSC so I don't get that death beep when I go in corners sometimes. Mm-hmm. Race radiator. It's got a coil rad race radiator. I've changed Yeah, a lot. Charging's all from an Australian HKB charging thing. I've done, you know, it's got a twin air inside. It's got dual batteries from Off-Grid Engineering out of Colorado.
You have a factory transcooler on that? Just thinking about the towing.
No, I've got that Western. I got another Watt auxiliary cooler because the Koyo Rad radiator doesn't have a cooler in it. So you have to put a trans cooler on because you lose it. So you have to do another loop and add a cooler.
Okay. Yeah. We've been talking about the trans cooler situation with 460s a lot lately, and it's same thing. You gotta
start doing. It's an easy, that's actually a really easy low cost mod that allows you to have a lot more reliability. Cause I mean, transmissions heat up a lot. And I honestly, I do this more times than you think when you go off road. What gear are you in? When you go out with a group, what gear are you in? And invariably, there's a large number of people who are talking a lot of smack on the internet who are sitting there in drive. So I'm like, and you don't have an, you don't have an extra cooler? Like, you better flush your transmission, buddy. Because like, you need to, you have to drive your car the way it needs to be driven in the situation you're in. And that means you have to learn it.
Yep.
And a lot of people are new to, like, this is another aspect of GXOR I think is interesting. 40%, I did this number just to have you, 40% of GXOR, 35,000 people, that's, 40% have never gone off-road and never built a truck.
I mean, I believe
it's not that surprising, but that's a big number.
That's a big number. But now they're exposed to it and they're more likely to.
Right.
Which is good.
Exactly.
What we want.
So, I got,
you know, absolutely, drop please. A couple of,
I'm working on some stuff.
Do it. Yeah. Let's hear it.
So, I'm working with a distributor, Lexus distributor down here, and we are going to be building a black line. So, but we're going to be building black line. Remember at SEMA last year, they announced the AAP program. It's the Associate Accessories Program through the Toyota and Lexus dealerships.
Yes, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, so vaguely. So let me bring it to top of mind, especially given recent announcements. This is important, everybody. Pay attention. This is why it's a drop. Okay? So aftermarket providers of accessories. Prinsu is enrolled. ARB is enrolled. The Medic is enrolled. Mm-hmm. More are coming. Bilstein enrolled. ARB by proxy, Old Man Emu, right? So the catalog is developing AAP on the Toyota and Lexus side. They also have really cool dog stuff. Like they have like dog harnesses and barriers and all kinds of stuff. It's awesome. And the camping gear, they have boxes, all the accessories, right? The AAP program means that you can go to your dealer, local dealer, and say, I would like a brand new GX550, please, with a lift, 35, a roof rack, a fridge, everything, right?
Yeah.
And you can order those parts through the dealer, through AAP. And then this is the part that cinches the deal. It's like, oh, why would I do that? They're going to mark it up, right? Except it's not that marked up. And you finance it as part of the new vehicle purchase. Warranty. It goes under the VIN as part of a vehicle, which means it's insured as the purchase price for your value.
Does it maintain factory warranty?
So you just insured your built truck.
Yep.
See that? That's the other caveat that absolutely matters there.
That's clutch. And that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It maintains the factory warranty as per any modification. So you don't violate your factory warranty to put a lift on it. They just won't ensure the function of the shock if it fails.
Right.
So if you put an aftermarket, if I put an Icon or a King or anybody's shock on my truck and it fails and I was under warranty, they just won't warranty that shock.
Right. Yeah. And
so,
I mean,
AAP, think about what we just saw in the Land Cruiser guys.
Yeah, this concept, like Mopar's been doing this for 10 years probably with Jeep stuff, but it's like, it's a no-brainer because they can make a little extra money. All it takes is some legal stuff and, you know, some underwriting stuff on the insurance side, and then train your, like the techs who are putting this stuff on the trucks I can guarantee are going to enjoy that more than they are doing oil changes on another RX 350.
That's what I'm saying.
You know?
And think about like Lexus too. Not just off-road. Imagine being able to AAP like stabilizers and better performance shocks and wheels and tires for the F series, and being able to, you know, the GX 550, obviously you can take an over trail and be like, I would like that to be taller, please.
Yep.
And you do all that through factory, and the, you know, the, I think they announced the 550 pricing now. It's like, I think the baseline over trail is like,
that's it?
I think I saw something said like 75. Yeah.
That seems about in line with what we expected. I mean, I got a headline.
Well, the baseline GX 460 right now, you can get a baseline, a base 460. You can get a black line for under like at 60 grand.
Yep. And I got
like 59, 60 grand.
The new cruiser is like
mid-50s. I'm typing, but it.
Cat motions. I must confirm. But the 460 is like, I was just posting about this today. Like the 460, between now and the end of the year.
Right.
The 550s aren't going into production for another couple months. Mm-hmm. And then it takes another couple months to finish and ship enough on a container ship and then has to clear customs.
460s are.
So you're not going to see it until next
upper
year.
Upper 50s?
Sometime.
Mid 50s? Summer. Mid 60s? Usually, right? Like,
hopefully. Yeah. And somebody's been tracking monthly, like, I know you can go to good car, bad car, and just pull monthly sales, but like,
because they don't want the
460 hybrid. Sales are increasing. And that's.
No, because the deposits on the 550s are off the hook.
Crazy.
I talked to the local dealers here. They've got like thousands.
Dude, I heard 18 months from first deliveries if you're getting on the list right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have unobtainium timelines to get to the 550. You have a proven platform with AAP available with providers of product to build a 460 off the lot. And then you have more aftermarket and you get the last, you get the last,
which it is
the last breath of the V8.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Like it's, I told it, I posted it as this is the most difficult choice of our time.
In the off-road world, in the Toyota 4x4.
But what do you do? Do you go for the tried and true 4.6 V8 with the 460 footprint and all
green.
The stuff that goes with it? And it looks really good. And you get a Nori.
Gorgeous.
The Nori looks
Nori
so good.
So pretty.
Or you can get a Nori in the 550, but you got to wait a year.
Yeah.
No.
All it takes is money. And I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of people who do both.
Yeah. I mean, I bought a 22 Nori. Because I love it more than anything. It's amazing. I'm going to lift it at some point. And once it ages out a little bit, we'll look at a 550 for sure. But
yeah.
I wanted the last of the V8. I have the first GX because I have an 03. That's an 03, by the way. My truck's an 03. Mm-hmm. So I have an 03 and I have a 22. So I have the first and last of the V8 GXs.
I always use the same picture for green.
I have
green.
All
just
the
GXs, weld. I don't even know what this photo is from, but like I just love.
Oh, and by the way, going back that render that Chris had up of the new cruiser with the ARB. That's from somebody
that
on mod name is Icarus, just to throw credit where credit's due.
Ah. Did you look at my your friend? Are you friends with me? You can look at my wall, and I have pictures of Nori. My Nori, it is this guy that I bought it from. So I got really lucky, and I will thank him, Paul, in Ohio. Thank you so much for being who you are. You're an amazing human being. He bought a brand new 22 Nori, and he owns a detailing shop. He color corrected it. Right off the lot. Then he PPF'd the entire thing.
Oh my God.
And then he ceramic coated the PPF.
That's like 10 grand worth of detail work.
Yeah. And then he tinted all the windows too.
Is the truck so stock
like,
otherwise?
It has Vossen bronze wheels with some ATs on it.
No.
But it's stock.
Oh, was that your,
it looked
that
like
your truck
which
that Chris just
referencing, Dan?
No.
Oh.
Facebook, okay.
It's like my own Facebook. But you can do like, it's like liquid, I always call it, it's like liquid gold seaweed.
Is this this?
I mean, I
think it's like so good looking.
That's what Maury is, right?
It's the shine on it. You can see the trees.
Does it look like an amazing green vehicle?
And it,
with bronze wheels?
Nor worked so well on all the other.
Oh, no, that's the electric car.
Chris, you have one job.
Womp womp.
That's the RZ. Arguably, it's a very good looking car for being an EV. I was shocked at how good looking it is.
Of the EV.
It's very good looking.
Of the EV or of the. Oh.
Yeah. I was accosted by people. I've never been accosted by people for a car. People actually walked up and they're like, "What is that? I like that."
That's good.
I'm like, it's an EV. And they're like,
"Yes,
that's positive." The Toyota version is heinous.
The Subaru version's even weirder.
It looks good. It's really comfy.
Subaru version.
It is. I think it's the same, right? It's like the same. It's the team.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is that called? A collaboration?
Model sharing. It's
the
Subaru one is an absolute atrocity. But
I mean, it's a Subaru. You can't expect. You can't have that.
Dude, the next one will be uglier, which will.
I saw the current gen WRX for the first time in person, like the other day here in town, and as it went around in front of me, I was like, "It's got like Hyundai taillights. Like it looks awful." Like,
yeah, it's not good. It's
again, I didn't get that.
And unfortunately, it's not that good to drive either.
By the way, Atkins
Kroll
is the Guam Lexus dealer. Yeah, now I want a front license plate from the Lexus dealer on Guam.
Now it's funny.
You should be able to.
Can I post stuff in chat here? No. I'm gonna put a link.
So I'm getting close on my my time limit here, as I got 800 things to do before I call tonight. But Dan, what else? I mean, you've talked and teased a bunch of stuff coming up for GXOR and the GX community. What kind of trips do you have planned other than presumably going out to Chase Rebel?
So that's actually an interesting trip in and of itself, because you can't technically do that.
Really?
Because you're not allowed to be involved. Again, so I'm going to go out and my wife's truck and I'm going to take my truck as well, or vehicle that I'm going to drive. I have to determine what vehicle I'll be driving. We'll see what's available at the time. But so she's going to begin at Tech in California or Nevada or wherever it is. But there's at a resort, and we start there and they do Tech.
Yeah.
They go away and I don't see her again. Like
until it's over.
They go dark. There's no communication, no cell phones. They take it all.
Yep.
They go do the race and you're not allowed to be in contact or nearby. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to basically chase from 2 days back.
Mm-hmm.
So they leave, we wait. There's some husbands of racers that I'm going with who are going to basically go and wait 2 days and then basically track online. We can track it online. Yep. So we'll have Starlink and we're just going to work remotely in the desert and work 2 days back from them and just move a 1 day up wherever they move. We're 2 days back basically.
Yep. Cool.
And then, so that's coming up in October. Between then, I am pretty much working on a car to go there in order to fix up hers, help whatever I can do. I am not interested in my own well-being right now. I'm here to help her. So we're packing, fixing, adjusting, doing whatever. We've got a lot of logos. We've got a lot of huge, we are actually very thankful for sponsorships. We did a really cool thing, which is I'll talk about for half a second. We had everyone in GXOR could donate. And if you donated, we'll put your name on the hood wrap.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a GXOR logo that we're mocking up and team name. And then there's going to be just a graffiti of signatures of everyone who donated from the club so that they can ride along. And then we also have our corporate vendor sponsors. Like the Fury Tire is sponsoring us because I shockingly am very impressed and love Fury Tires off road.
Fury Tires, F-U-R-Y.
You would never think that, right? It's like, what do you think of when I say Fury Tire?
I've seen it before.
I don't even know.
Just on the back of like a Jeep or something, I think.
No.
If you search for Fury,
which is amazing because.
Which is 100%.
They're usually on like the Brodos or Giant Show Ford trucks. Oh, like their specialty tire.
37 by 16 and a half.
Most sold tires, like a 24-inch wheel MT.
Yeah.
Oh. So they're like crazy giant show truck tires. But they're rough. They're Country Hunter MT and RT.
I'm looking at it right now.
And that MT2 is new. So that just came out. So I don't know anything about that.
Who owns
that Country Hunter RT right there? That thing is insane. It's great. Like I have, those are the 37 1250s I've got and she's getting. She has 1350s now, the same tire. We have run all over the place through jagged rocks. The sidewalls hold up. They grip wet mud, whatever. Mm-hmm. And those are RTs.
Who owns them?
And I run a lot of tires, but
do you know who owns Fury? Or are they just
I have no earthly idea.
Let's see, because usually like the small.
I know they're amazing.
Share like, carcasses.
I was shocked because I heard that they were going to try and do like off-road, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I knew about Fury from like, if you go into SEMA, every single Ford truck that was like 17 feet tall had Fury tires on them, right? But then I was like, they're based in Texas and I was working in Texas and I ran into some shops there that were like running these tires. And I was like, what? And then I got a set and I was like, oh, okay.
Ooh.
Because I was running like up when I went to 35s to 37s, I was like, what 37 do I want to run? I kind of want to be different because I'm different, whatever. And I found out, I was like, oh, you know what? What about those?
Mm-hmm.
So I called and got a set and put them on. And I'm like, these are the.
Ross, I think expensive. They're just them.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
And then, so Fury is one of our big ones.
I think so too. I mean, if you Google that, like, most of the stuff that comes up is SEMA articles.
Pretty good at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like they're made in either Vietnam or China or Korea, depending on which.
Yeah.
But,
you know, plug that. I mean, I'm happy to plug that one because I actually have practical on the ground experience with something that works and along with some of the others because we accepted sponsorships from people that we know, but also the vendor sponsorships were people that we had stuff from.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Midgard Overland stuff in Texas, they're also in Texas. They make those, I don't know if anybody had them, but the LFD bars, they're like load bars that go onto the stock roof rack mounts, but they're just bars. So you don't have to have the rails.
Yep.
And they hold like a massive amount of weight. So we use those in our move.
What's the name of the company?
Storage box. Midgard.
LFB is like the name big of name for the
Midgard. Midgard Adventure Equipment. I think their URL is midgardadventure.com. They have like roof racks and load bars and all sorts of cool accessories for your truck. And then like recovery gear, like Treaty Oak off road, they supplied a lot of the gear there. So we put them up on the thing, Rad Rubber, cause the liners we love, like Eddie's a cool guy and I've always had Rad Rubber stuff on my trucks. and then we had, I Hate Mud, Woody, kicked in cause we created the GXOR section on I Hate Mud, which is also unique.
It's huge,
I would say
too.
It's huge.
I'm gonna pull.
It gives me even more confidence to find an old
470. Yeah, it's insane.
That's like, I have an LX 470. I was the 100 series, but like knowing that I have that as a resource, there was no hesitation in pulling the trigger on that.
Yeah,
going into the GXs, I was like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
0304. If you're an old school, and this is like a great recommendation for old school Land Cruiser people, 0304 GXs. They have a metallic, they have the aluminum intake, so it's not plastic, so you don't feel like you're going to break it. It's simple. There's less computers. It's not hard to diagnose. It's easy to maintain. You can do most of the work yourself. Nothing real complex about it.
Yep. It's, that's awesome.
It's like super easy entry level sort of GX.
And it's a V8 4Runner underneath, so it's got endless resources.
Or you buy a 2014 GX460 and add MTS and crawl control for $200.
You said 2016? Those are way more expensive.
How do I do that?
I think my computer just froze.
You can do 2014.
To be honest, I am one text message short away from being a 460 owner. The guy, I went on a trip and the guy sold the truck. He was like, I'm going on a trip. I was going on a trip. I was like, cool. I'll hit you up when we both get back. And when I got back, he's like, oh, I took money. Somebody's coming to buy it. And I was like, God damn it. Yeah, that money spent, Ross.
There's always the next one.
My wife got her GX in a similar fashion, but she was the one that showed up first. So she was, because she bought it in, so she's from Canada. So when she was living in Canada before we met, she bought her GX and was looking at, she was actually looking at a 100, like at the site of the 100, and got word that an alert on the app in Canada called Kijiji that had a GX alert. And she was like, I'm on my way. Mm-hmm. And like bolted and went and like told the guys, like, you will take my money now and you will give. He's like, I need the car for another week. I just put it up to see if somebody would be interested.
Yeah. Too bad it's mine.
But that's ultimately like that, her getting into a GX before we ever met, and everything is like how we met. Like, mm-hmm. we met through off road, which is kind of cool because she was wheeling up in Canada and doing her thing with GXs and joined GXOR and friendships and all that good stuff. So it was like awesome that, like, a portion of my life is like around all this thing.
Yep.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah. It's a unique story and it's fucking awesome.
It's cool.
I mean, we don't hear stories like Woo-hoo. That and we hear a lot of stories, you know,
feel sure. good stuff. You guys already did all this stuff on the good stuff we did, right?
No, I don't.
You know about that stuff, the donations and the rescues and all that. We,
shit.
We had a member whose wife died of cancer, and he had to sell his truck to pay for her medical treatments. So they had two young kids, and she made him promise to get like a GX and take the kids out on the adventures they couldn't go on together. So this was back when we didn't even have that many members then. I want to say we only had like 10 or 15,000. Mm-hmm. We donated enough money amongst ourselves to buy a GX and give it to the guy.
That's awesome.
So we delivered it to his house. There was a member who is a police officer who was able to come and get the car from the guy that owned it, that we bought it from. He helped orchestrate and we delivered it to him. And then we had all the vendors start pitching in to help him modify it. So we ended up like, it was already lifted, but we had it, like, he got a long range tank.
That's fantastic.
And now it's like all tricked out. He posts his kids in the group as they get older. That's like one. And then we had like a firefighter in Denver female firefighter in Denver who had a double mastectomy and took the firefighter like trial. I don't know what that's called. The firefighter test.
What?
We have to climb the first. Yeah. She did that with still like post-op, like still wounded. And she passed, but she was like, also she was trying to do stuff with her kids. But, and so we had Toy Tech before Doug sold it to DPI, but it was Toy Tech that they're like, oh, bring it in for a lift.
Yep.
And they had it and they were like, oh, we need it for, you know, we're busy, we're backed up and we're waiting on some parts, so it's okay if you leave it for a couple of days. And then we had like vendors like DeMello kicked in with a bumper and we had everybody donate stuff and we helped and we built the whole thing out and they like did a trick my ride sort of reveal on I think it's on YouTube still.
Is somebody writing these, somebody's got to write these stories up for like that new OVR magazine or something. These are great.
Yeah. We try to do that often, like that we reached out this time for the Rebel Rally, which I think was cool because we wanted to have everybody the opportunity to be involved with it. Mm-hmm. But we're due, like we've grown, we're due for something. I want to do something cool. We need to do more of that philanthropic helping people, which is kind of the vibe of it. It's like we don't put up with We don't put up with trolls and people that want to be entertained on the internet and be rude to folks. Like, if you're not there to help yourself and others, then you can just find another group and that's okay.
Yeah,
too sure. And I'm okay with that.
Well, I know it's a long
way. And I'd rather have.
No, it's a long ways out, but if we're going to do philanthropy stuff, then let's get a Northeast GXOR Toys for Tots thing going this winter.
We do.
Around Christmas.
We had one of the largest Toys for Tots donations in California.
What about in the Northeast?
Probably not.
I'm willing to head it up.
It's cold. It's cold up there.
It is cold, but I'm here. So.
But we do Toys for Tots is a big deal. It's meet. Good. You do a meetup, good. Toys for Tots, you know, all that stuff. So yeah. I think it's a great idea, and you should. And everybody that's watching that has a chapter, you should always get involved with chapters. That's why we started chapters to begin with. We have over 75 chapters in every state, and some of them have additional chapters within states for cities, like Houston's huge, et cetera. So you, like, check it out, find your local chapter, and then there's people everywhere.
Wow.
There's 1,200 GXOR members in Georgia.
Crazy.
There's over 2,000 in SoCal.
Yeah, it's become a big community, and it's
yeah, so anywhere you are, you can find someone, and you don't have to have a GX. Like, we wheel with everybody. That's the whole point. So just go have fun.
Yep. We're all so, the same reason.
And if you're serious about Toyota, you got to be serious about Toyota.
That's great.
If you're serious about your truck, you got to be really serious.
Seriously,
you are all in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was browsing very saddest. Cheap GX listings, but then I found sad? This thing. It is sad.
Ooh. 230,000 miles, 1998. So it's got.
Is that deliberate or opinion?
Either needs a fuse or it's really slammed. Goodwill. What? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, no, that's dead. That's dead. Globes or something.
Yeah,
I think it's outstanding.
Steering wheel covers always scare me.
Can't read.
Look at that.
Low CIG build. Okay, guys. I unfortunately have to do. Well, fortunately and unfortunately,
I'm going to say fortunately because I'm tired. I need two
projects for my MBA. So.
Yeah.
I'm
definitely tired too. I'll wrap up the show real fast before Ross runs away.
That's awesome.
So you can rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We're like and subscribe on YouTube. Follow Dan at GX Offroad on Instagram, and it's at GXOR on Facebook or GXOR.org for just internet.
GXOR.
Just GXOR. Yep. And participate in shenanigans on the forums and MUD.
You can read Ross's car reviews on
and Instagram and all other places.
Anything in months. And Ross is like the one from Friends. And I'm kind of really dead. We did it. We did a show. Thank you, Dan.